From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Wednesday, January 29th, 2025. I'm your host, Boston Christopher, Gunathchish, Hawa, Toexik Nusum, Salama. Thank you for joining the conversation. Today, Poetry Out Loud is a national competition that promotes the study of great poetry and a spoken word contest. We'll talk with some local students about their experience in the upcoming competition this Friday night at JDHS. The world of trivia goes big this Saturday with World Quest 2025 from the Juno World Affairs Council. We'll chat with question mastermind Carl Broderson about this year's event. And the Fireside Chat series continues this Friday night with Lights of Inside Passage and Beyond. We talk with Gary Gillette about lighthouses and more. Those conversations coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon. But first, Our Living Lands from Native Voice One.
This is Our Living Lands, and I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The devastation in and around Los Angeles is a reminder that extreme wildfires burn year-round. That's why the Washoe Tribe of Nevada and California is working to reintroduce intentional cultural fire meant to restore forest health. In the first installment of a three-part series on indigenous fire, the Mountain West News Bureau's Caleb Radel has more.
It's a sun-splashed afternoon in a forest near South Lake Tahoe, where large fir and pine trees stretch into the clear blue sky. Here, there are dozens of tribal members eager to learn about cultural burning. But first, they have to learn how to control and put out fires. That's why a group is huddled around a heavy-duty water pump with two thick fire hoses connected to it. One is in a tub of water, the size of an above-ground pool, and the other is unraveled a few dozen yards away. Jeremy Miles Placencia is with the U.S. Forest Service and leading the demonstration.
We have everything connected. We have our discharge hose. Now we can set up the fuel line.
And then he revs up the water pump. Water pushes through the extended hose like a snake coming to life. Now participants can practice spraying pressurized water as if they were putting out a fire. One person soaking up that knowledge is 30-year-old Kyle Tabor Cooper. He's a member of the Nooksack tribe in Washington State, but lives in northern Nevada and is engaged to a member of the Washoe tribe.
I've met a lot of people that have inspired me to like get into this training and just show me like a different kind of way, like with cultural intentional fire.
Cultural fires are restorative, not destructive. They're typically done on a smaller scale to take care of traditional medicine plants or other cultural resources that rely on fire.
So for example, the Washoe tribe, our first two burns were burning a willow patch.
That's Rihanna Jones, the director of the Washoe tribe's Environmental Protection Department.
Washoes are famous for their baskets, making beautiful baskets. So when you burn the willows, they grow back better, straighter, with less secondary nodes.
But the Washoe tribe wasn't allowed to burn for more than a century. That's because of longtime colonial federal policies that prioritize suppression or putting out fires as soon as they start. Jones says that has hurt tribes and the health of many forests.
Fire suppression is like indigenous culture and indigenous people suppression as well. You know, they were not interested in, I think, learning from indigenous people.
But that has started to change over the last decade. Now, many federal fire officials say decades of keeping fire off the land caused a buildup of highly flammable dead trees and brush, turning many forests into a tinderbox. And rising temperatures and drier conditions are adding even more fuel. A 2021 study led by UCLA found that climate change has been the main driver of the increase of fire weather in the West.
Climate change has had a huge effect with respect to drought, increase of pests and pathogens, and then increase of wildfire. So we're having these catastrophic huge wildfires coming through that we can't keep up with.
Global nonprofit The Nature Conservancy has worked with tribes to help restore that balance. The group brings together trained burn bosses and indigenous fire practitioners to work and learn side by side. Brandon Cobb is Cherokee and a program manager with the conservation group, which was here at this training.
A lot of what we're doing here is trying to return to that different style of fire that allows us to actually promote our ecosystems, promote our cultures.
He says that's why it's important that younger generations become educated and trained on stewarding their homelands.
As indigenous people, it took almost 500 years to nearly eradicate us. And in order to rebuild to what we once were, it will take at least 500 years.
Back near the water pump, Tabor Cooper is motivated to be a part of that change.
I feel like there's a lot of purpose in this kind of line of work.
Through this hands-on training, Tabor Cooper gained qualifications to fight fires with federal and state agencies and the Washoe tribe, and work on cultural burns with tribal members. He's already gotten a taste of what it's like. He recently observed a cultural burn in a meadow to restore medicinal plants like elderberries, an experience that inspired him even more.
The possibilities and like the opportunity and like what the future holds like seems so much brighter. Introducing a relationship with fire that isn't just bad.
Tabor Cooper says he's excited to carve out a career in fire and pass that knowledge down to future generations. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Caleb Radel.
Next week, you'll hear about a tribe working to build its capacity to conduct burns on their ancestral lands. I'm Antonia Gonzalez for Our Living Lands, a collaboration of Kuwanic Broadcast Corporation, Native Public Media, and the Mountain West News Bureau.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
A couple announcements before we begin today. Tongass Trout Unlimited brings you the return of bar flies. They will be tying a beginner fly, the Humpy Hooker. No experience needed. Materials will be provided. Vices and tools are limited, though, so consider bringing your own. It's at the Imperial Bar tomorrow night, January 30th, from 6 to 8 p.m. And for more information, you can email tongustu@gmail.com. Also, heart disease is the leading cause of death in the U.S., but small daily choices can make a huge impact. Search is launching Heart Matters, a 28-day program offered at no cost to participants and designed to help all Southeast Alaskans prioritize their heart health. Participants set personalized goals, gain access to expert advice, and join weekly lunch and learns on key topics like cholesterol, dental health, and goal achieving. This program is open to all ages, and it begins this February. Imagine that, a 28-day program in February. Learn more and sign up at search.org/heartmatters. And that's search, search.org/heartmatters.
Support from Hanson Gress. Seeking curious people who like technology, network engineering, and customer support. Opportunities for those who thrive on problem solving. Details at hansongress.com/careers.
You are listening to Community Supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm Boston Christopher. This Friday at Juno Douglas High School, Yada'a Kathle, it's the school-wide Poetry Out Loud competition. It's part of a national program, and the students will move on from this Friday, whoever, I guess, wins the competition, and they'll get the opportunity to compete statewide, and then, hopefully, a trip to the national competition. And today, we have some students who are here to share more about this experience, as well as a couple of the organizers. I have Angela Noon, who is a teacher.
Yes,
well, gonna cheese for being here. I have Amanda Falori, who knows all about the Poetry Out Loud competition, having been part of it and running it and doing all the things for it for the Alaska, what is it, the
Alaska State Council on the
thank
Arts.
Thank you. I couldn't imagine.
And the
imagine.
Juno Arts and Humanities Council.
Yes, thank
and
you.
And I've run the program for like 11 years.
Yeah, awesome. and then we also have students, Lumi Furman and Cassie Lumba. Gunath Cheesh.
Thank you for
yeah,
having
Yeah, you're going to have to lean in because you're sharing that.
Thank you for having
there
me.
There you go. Nice to see you all. Okay, so let's start with you, Amanda, since you have 11 years of experience. What is Poetry Out Loud? Let's just start there.
Poetry Out Loud is a recitation competition for high school students. Say that really fast three times. It's hard, right? So it's mostly geared for the, you know, the sake of memorization, like really taking in the words, memorizing them. That's the main score that they're adjudicated on. And then, of course, there's performance and then learning the poem. But it's essentially learning how to memorize someone else's words, be able to interpret them, understand their intention, and tell that story on stage. So these students are not only memorizing a poem, but they are also learning public speaking skills. They get opportunities like to come on the radio. You know, you go from the classroom to the school, to the state level, into nationals. And Alaska is one time, and we're hoping that, you know, maybe this year it'll be another time. But it's a really great program. And again, I've run it for 11 years, and I believe it always enriches every student who participates.
Yeah, and it runs around the state, right?
It does, all over the state.
And the finals have been held here in Juneau for many years.
Every year, yep. It's the main, where we always have the state, is Juneau. Except for COVID, obviously we did it like remotely. So we had a few remote years. But Alaska actually set the precedent for doing things remotely, because we do have rural areas where students couldn't travel for a school competition. So we did video adjudication. And so we still actually incorporate that for those areas in Alaska. But when COVID happened, we taught the lower 48 how to do it.
Nice. So this Friday is the competition at the high school. And this is counted as the regional competition, right? Or the person from this Friday will move on to the state competition?
Yep. So basically each school that's participating this year is representing each region. So whoever wins the school competition at JDHS represents Juneau for the state competition.
Awesome. That sounds so good. And that will be coming in March. The statewide competition will be coming in March. It's usually filmed downstairs here at KTOO. And you can see more of the past ones. You can go to kto.org/poetry-out-loud, or just search Poetry Out Loud KTOO, and you'll see some of the past year's competitions, and which is kind of cool. It's really fun to have the history of it on the website there as well. And of course, for more information about the whole program, you can go to poetryoutloud.org, and that will tell you about the nationwide competition, which is kind of cool. All right. So Angela, as you, tell me a little bit about you. You teach at the high school?
Yes. Yeah, so I'm an English teacher at JDHS. I had taught at Thunder Mountain, but I'm now at the new Consolidated High School. And our English department talked about this at the very beginning of the year, because this had been a tradition that we did at Thunder Mountain. And we thought we'd love to bring this to our newly combined school and make this a JDHS tradition. So English department, we have been doing poetry in all English classes at the high school. And it's been really wonderful to walk through the hallways and hear poetry. Kids are practicing, you know, reciting. And no matter what corner you're in, you see students practicing their poems, because we did classroom presentations. So every English student at our high school has presented a poem to the class. And then if they wanted to, they could sign up for the school competition. And we have around 50 students
Wow.
who chose. It's really impressive. And it's a very powerful thing to watch students find their voice.
How is it organized in terms of, you said you get together with all the teachers, the mm-hmm. English teachers, I guess, and present this. Are you then like looking at like poetry structures or different periods of poetry or the different kinds of poetry? Because that's part of the experience too, is learning yeah. about poetry. Yes, to stand up and be able to say other people's words, but you're also being exposed to things that maybe you hadn't been exposed to before.
Right. So we do a lot of sort of analysis too of poetry with it. It's part of the teaching. So I think you guys might have had to yes. do an analysis or annotation of their poem, looking for literary devices and things like that. And, you know, that's part of our English curriculum, is to use poetry. And this is kind of an intensive view of it. They have to choose poetry out loud poems. That is one of the limitations. There's thousands of poems, though, on the site. So the kids really get to choose something that speaks to them.
I see. Okay.
Yes, but we do have them go through an analysis process with that, so that they have an understanding of the meaning and some of the sound qualities that are effective, especially when they're presenting their poems.
And there's no limitation on who can participate. Is there an age group or a year or whatever? I think one of our persons here actually was doing it as a freshman. So I guess there is no limit. You just have to be in high school, right?
You have to be in high school or be taking a high school English class.
Okay.
So people that do homeschool or, you know, a middle school, maybe they're taking an honors class. As long as they're in that level of high school, they can compete in the competition.
I see. Okay. That's kind of cool. And so this Friday, Angela, mm-hmm. can anybody show up to watch this competition?
They can, yes. I talked to our principal. The only thing the outside public would have to do is they need to sign in at the front office if they're going to attend. And it should start around, we're using fifth and sixth period, so we're getting kids into the auditorium around 2. So I think we'll be ready to start by 2:10, 2:15.
Yeah, I'm thinking friends, family, you know, aunties, you know, grandparents. They all want to be able to come and watch. And then there's other people who are just interested in poetry and might want to come and watch
the
students. Yeah, to see what they choose. And then, okay, so hi, Cassie and Lumi.
Hi.
So let's talk to you two a little bit about this. So why did you, let's talk, I'm going to ask each of you the same question a little bit here, but Cassie, let's start with you. So why did you choose to participate? Obviously, you studied it in class, but then you had the option, as Angela said, or would you call her Mrs. Noon or something?
Miss Noon, yes.
Miss Noon. Just Noon. But we're calling her Angela.
Okay.
You're outside of school.
Yeah.
So why did you choose to participate in the competition then?
Well, right now I'm a junior. So when I was a freshman, I decided to do it. I think it was a lot about putting my foot forward and learning how to put myself out there. I think poetry is something filled with so much emotion. And I don't know if you've seen Dead Poets Society, but John Keating, he says, we don't read and write poetry because it's cute. We read and write poetry because we are members of the human race, and the human race is filled with passion. And I think that really carries forward. And that was what I was thinking as I set my foot on that stage. It's so much about learning how to be comfortable with yourself and learning how to project your voice and be filled with that emotion and be comfortable with being kind of vulnerable in front of this huge audience. And I think that's one thing that I really wanted to try to do when I was a freshman. And it's something I think has been super fun because poetry isn't just words on a paper. It can mean so much more, especially if you pick a poem that really speaks to you. And yeah, that's one of the biggest reasons that I wanted to do this and that I've been doing this. And I still want to do it even next year.
Yeah,
I plan to do it. But yeah.
Nice. That's awesome. Okay, Lumi. Now, I know we should say that people might recognize you because you made it to the state competition last year. So, and as a freshman. So you're a sophomore now?
Yes.
Wow. Was that surprising to do that last year as a freshman?
Yeah, I was really like nervous because most of the people were seniors. So it was a big surprise in the end.
Yeah, I can imagine that. They were probably a little mad at you because it was their last last chance.
They were so supportive of her.
They were really nice.
Yeah, that's really cool. Because I can imagine like this Friday, if you're doing it in fifth and sixth period and it's basically, it sounds like then it's going to be an all school like assembly or something that's going
to
be.
All classes are invited to
all classes
attend.
Will be invited. So it almost seems like, is it a little more nerve wracking to do it in front of all your friends at school versus even doing it in like the public eye?
I think it was a little more nerve-wracking in the studio just because I knew I was being filmed. With my friends, it was more like calm. They weren't filming me.
I see. Okay. Well, that's kind of cool. Okay. So, and this is interesting, Lumi, because you've been doing this for 2 years now. What kind of things have you learned over the course of these 2 years being part of Poetry Out Loud?
I've learned a lot to be more confident, I'd say. Because you're taking a big risk just going from a school competition to going to a room where you don't know anybody and your next minute you're going to be on stage on TV with doing a lot of poems.
Yeah, for sure. And like it is interesting, like have you learned things about, how did you choose the poems that you liked? Was there something about the structure of them that you liked or there's something about poetry that you learned that you're like, yeah, I want to do this one?
I really looked at poems I could relate to, like cultural and just emotion-wise, like sadness, anger, happiness. Because, you know, those basic ones.
I was
going
to say, if you stopped at sad and angry, I'm going to be like, wow.
Yeah.
Lumi, we can get you out of the house more.
just any emotion, really.
Right, I got you. And so figuring out what touches you, though, right?
Yes,
the poem had to touch you. Yeah, I see. And Cassie, what about you? In terms of, like, learning about poetry or the structure of poetry, because you were studying it in class before you were part of the competition. So what is it about poetry in general that sort of speaks to you?
Well, one thing I love about poetry is that there really is no limitations. People think for something to be a poem, it has to have, you know, stanzas, and everything has to be very like uniform and such. But it really isn't. Poetry, you can apply it to so many things. And I think if you read like a lot of literature, even just in that, you can see kind of like poetic verses and something that speaks to you. And in terms of choosing poems, like Lumi said, something that really like touches your emotions, or at least for me, something that I can really, really resonate with, like maybe something with a family member or friends. I think because poems are like so versatile, and I think as high schoolers, teenagers are often really, you know, angsty and they just want to get out of school and they just want to do this and that. But if you really sit down and you choose a poem through the Poetry Out Loud website, because there's thousands of them, and you look at something and it really speaks to you, I think you might find that it really does touch your heart, and that can be something that you really want to show the world. And that's why I really think Poetry Out Loud is great. And that's what I love about poetry.
Nice. Yeah, we could clip those and just send them to the National, and they can just use that as a
I just love those comments. Like, yeah. It just, you know, when things resonate with you and you keep them in your heart, you know, like the poems, they'll stay with you. Those words will stay with you. It's just so amazing to hear what you ladies have to say.
I'm wondering if you guys remember your poems from last year. Do you still have them with you? I mean, in your heart, in your head?
A little bit.
A little bit.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, words do disappear when you have to memorize, probably.
Yeah.
But there are people who end up learning stuff and then recite it for the rest of their lives, you know, something that might speak to them, passages from Shakespeare or whatever. But what you said, Cassie, about poetry being pretty much anything, right? It's really just, you know, kind of the art form can be so many things and so many structures, which is kind of cool. Have you learned, Lumi, over the last couple of years, do you have, whether you chose them for your poem for Poetry Out Loud, is there some poets that you have sort of started to come to enjoy?
Yes, there are a couple. List them?
Yeah, I would like to know who they are.
Oh, now they're like disappearing. Okay.
Of course. That's okay. It's all right. You think about it. Cassie, do you know one?
There was this one poet, I think her one book, it was called Milk and Honey. That one went really popular. It was by Rupi Kaur.
Okay.
Her words are, they were very deep and very raw. And I think a lot of people, especially my age or even older, like younger millennials, I guess, they've read that book. And I think it really has touched them, especially for young women. I think that was a really powerful thing. But also even just like the really traditional ones and the inspirational ones like Shakespeare and such, like even reading Romeo and Juliet freshman year. I know a lot of people may find it really boring, but I think it's very entertaining. Like poetry can be comical and witty, but also so passionate. And that's one of the things that is really cool about it.
And Lumi, do you have one come to mind?
Pablo Neruda.
Oh, my God. Of course.
I love his- He's my number one favorite.
You have to see that movie that was all using his poetry. I can't remember the name of it right now. And it's probably actually for more adult folks, but
I'm trying to think of the name of it right now. I don't know if it's just called Pablo, but I don't think it is.
No, I don't remember
yet. I know what you're talking
about. It's so good.
I can't think of the title.
Yeah, it's really good. But if you like Pablo Neruda, that's a good one to look up. But there's a movie about it, which is kind of cool. So that's kind of awesome. Okay, so let's see. I want to ask you if I can put you on the spot, both of you. What did we choose for this week's competition? Looks like Cassie will be going first, according to the movie.
Thank you.
Pushing the microphone. So what did you choose for this competition? And will you recite it for us on the air here?
Oh, yes. So for this competition, I chose a poem called Miss You, Would Like to Grab That Chilled Tofu We Love by Gabrielle Calvo-Caressi. yes, the title is very funny, but once you listen to it and you hear it, it's very emotional.
Okay.
And I think that's something that's touched me. Should I start?
Yeah,
go for it.
Whenever you're ready.
Do not care if you bring only your light body. Would just be so happy to sit at the table and talk about the menu. Miss you. Wish we could bet which chilies they'll put on the cubes of tofu, our favorite. Sometimes green, sometimes red. Roasted, we always thought, but so cold and fresh. How did they do it? Wish you could be here to talk about it like it was so important. Wish you could. watched you on the screens as I was walking, as I was cooking. Wished you could get out of the hospital. Can't bring myself to order our dish and eat it in the car. Miss you laughing. Miss you coming in from the cold or one too many meetings laughing. I'll order already. I'll order 7 helpings, some dumplings, those cold yam noodles that you like. You can come in your light body or skeleton or be invisible. I don't even care. No, you have a long way to travel. No, I don't even know if it's long at all. Wish you could tell me what you're reading, if you're reading. Miss you. I'm at the table in the back. And that's my poem.
Wow.
That was Thank lovely. You.
And that is from memory. There was no paper in the studio here for that, which is, that's beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah, it is interesting because you'll get that laugh when you say the name of the title.
Yes.
But then if people, when they listen to it, they're going to, it's very warm. It's very warm.
Yeah, I think, I think on Tuesday when I was presenting it in front of the class, I think presenting it in front of the class is actually scarier than doing it in front of the audience because it just feels so much like way more intimate, I feel. But everyone did chuckle a little when they heard that title. But then it really quieted down once you heard the emotion. And I think even saying it, my voice quivers because it feels so raw for me. But
Yeah, well, it's interesting because if you can capture that sort of sense of intimacy in the larger setting, that's that just like it breaks people's heart. Like, it's just so nice. And you have a connection to it. You can tell just in the way you're reading it, which is really nice. Okay, Lumi, what poem did you do or are you doing this time? And will you recite it for us?
I chose Don't Let Me Be Lonely at the Airport Security Checkpoint.
Another fun title. I love it.
By Claudia Rankin.
Okay, let's whenever you're ready.
At the airport security checkpoint, on my way to visit my grandmother, I am asked to drink from my water bottle. This water bottle? That's right. Open it and drink from it. At the airport security checkpoint, on my way to visit my grandmother, I am asked to take off my shoes. Take off my shoes? Yes, both please. At the airport security checkpoint, on my way to visit my grandmother, I am asked if I have a fever. A fever? Really? Yes, really. My grandmother is in a nursing home. It's not bad. It doesn't smell like pee. It doesn't smell like anything. When I go to see her as I walk through the hall past the common room in the nurse's station, old person after old person reaches out his or her hand to me. Stephen, one says. Anne, another calls. It's like being in a third world country. But instead of food or money, you are what is wanted. Your company. In third world countries, I have felt overwhelmingly American. Calcium rich, privileged, and white. Here, I feel young, lucky, and sad. Sad is one of those words that has given up its life for our country. It's been a martyr for the American dream. It's been neutralized, co-opted by our culture to suggest a tinge of discomfort that lasts the time it takes for this and then for that to happen. The time it takes to change a channel. But sadness is real because once it meant something real. It meant dignified, grave. It meant trustworthy. It meant exceptionally bad, deplorable, shameful. It meant massive, weighty, forming a compact body. It meant falling heavily. And it meant of a color dark. It meant dark. In color to darken. It meant me. I felt sad.
Wow. That was amazing. Oh my gosh. You two are so inspiring. That is so wonderful. I hope one of you bursts through the competition and makes it to state, which you'll be able to see on March 5th, right here on KTOO 360 TV. It will be broadcast. That'll be the Alaska statewide Poetry Out Loud competition. But if you want to go this Friday, between around fifth period, which I guess is around 2 o'clock
around
for the rest
2 o'clock,
of us,
they would just need to make sure that they sign
check
in
at the front desk.
Office, right?
So show up a little bit early if you wanted to do that. Yep. And for more information, you can go to a couple different websites. You can go to the JAHC, JAHC.org under their education tab. You can find out a little bit about it there. You can go to poetryoutloud.org, which is the national site. And if you want to view past competitions and see Lumi from last year on the TV, go to kto.org/poetry-out-loud. Gunath Cheesh for being here today. Thank you so much. It was really a pleasure to learn about this and what a wonderful program that it continues to be.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, all at the same time. I love it. Thank you so much. Okay, up next, we talk with Carl Broderson about trivia and more at this year's World Quest 2025. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. But first, a savory moment.
Step in to the savory moment. Have you ever bypassed the open bin of yellow-ish potatoes at the grocery store and grabbed instead one of those 5-pound luggers sitting off to the side, heaved it into your cart, and paid extra at the checkout counter? Then towed that big boy home only to find that your efforts were absolutely worth it? If so, you probably bought a bag of Yukon Gold potatoes, those bright yellow tubers that make the creamiest, most buttery mashers in the world. If you then became obsessed with learning more about Yukon Golds, the person to turn to is Dr. Lukey Peters, editor-in-chief of Potato News Today. Dear Dr. Peters, I'm writing from Alaska, where I host a 2.5-minute food podcast. I'd love to do a segment on your insights into the Yukon Gold potato. Would you be available to answer a few questions by email? Where did this cultivar originate? Second, how do you identify a true Yukon Gold?
You got mail.
Here we go. I've compiled a little overview report on the Yukon Gold potato that I hope might be useful. The Yukon Gold potato was developed in the 1960s by Garnet Gary Johnston in Guelph, Ontario, Canada, and was released in 1980. This potato variety was inspired by a small rough potato known as Papa Amarilla, Spanish for yellow potato, grown by indigenous communities in the Peruvian Andes. Yukon Gold is a cultivar most distinctly characterized by thin, smooth, yellow-tinged flesh. The tubers are slightly oval, maybe somewhat flattened. Shallow pink eyes distinguish Yukon Gold from other yellow-skinned, yellow-flesh cultivars. The Yukon Gold potato's popularity can be attributed to its unique characteristics, culinary versatility, health benefits, and effective promotion and marketing. Kindly, Lukey. Meet the editor-in-chief of Potato News Today and get his favorite Yukon Gold recipe at savorymoment.org. From the studios of KCAW in Sitka, Alaska, I'm Beth Short Rhodes. Whatever is on your dinner table tonight, may you savor the moment.
This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm Boston Christopher. Time once again for World Quest. It's 2025, the version, and it's the biggest and most beloved trivia event in Juno. Or at least, that's what people say. And it's also the largest fundraiser for Juno World Affairs Council. It's all happening this Saturday, February 2nd. And for more details and tickets, you can go to jwac.org. And I'm here now with Carl Broderson, the trivia master himself, to tell us more. Hi, Carl.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Of course. Gunath Cheesh for being here today. It's always a pleasure to have you in to talk about the World Quest and this year's 2025 version. But first, I always like to set the table here and tell us a little bit about JWAC. What is the Juno World Affairs Council?
Well, perfectly from memory, the Juno World Affairs Council is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization whose mission is to encourage dialogue and understanding of important international, economic, political, and social issues by bringing experts to Juno to present to us in person the global issues they specialize in.
Oh, wow.
We bring the world to Juno.
So basically you bring experts on different topics to town to tell us about those things.
Yes. Even in the Zoom age, this is still an important thing to do in person.
Absolutely. And then you also have, you sponsor those travelogues too, which is on a Tuesday every month or something?
Yes. Tuesday travelogues down at the Nickelodeon, Gold Town. They're wonderful opportunities for our friends and neighbors to come and tell us about their travels so that we don't have to go in person.
Yeah. So people who can't get to a certain location or whatever might be able to learn a little something. And it's basically like when you see your friend says, hey, do you want to watch all the slides from my trip?
Right.
And then they share that with you. And you're forcing yourself to do that because you want to know more about Egypt or wherever that person went, which is kind of cool. But the bringing people to town isn't cheap. Finding these experts around the world. And so this fundraiser is very popular. How many years has it been going?
This is the 19th annual World Quest.
Wow.
At least according to the Perpetual Trophy. There may have been more before that that weren't recorded.
Right. Before recorded time.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. If they're not in brass, they don't count.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So tell me, what is Word Quest?
It is a giant trivia night. I mean, it's very similar to most fundraisers that you would see at Centennial Hall. There's silent auction, there's dinner, et cetera. But we have about 2.5 hours with lots of breaks in between of really fun, interesting trivia. So there's an excellent program that is the question set. And the reason that they say it's the best in town is because I say that because I am completely biased as the person who writes all the questions.
Yes, I remember this from previous years that you are the one who, you're the keeper of the keys, as it were.
Yep.
And so, you have all of the, and do you make it up every year?
Yeah, it takes weeks.
So there's new questions every year?
Yes.
And with the amount of people that come to this thing, how many questions do you prepare?
It's 10 rounds, or sorry, 5 rounds of 10 questions, so approximately 50. But during the end, we have what we call a lightning round, where we have rapid fire, smaller questions that are only worth a quarter of a point. And that's where you'd put something like, what flag is this? Or what capital is this? Stuff that is still important to know, but isn't necessarily worth an entire point of a question.
Okay. And so if I want to participate in this, how do I go about becoming a participant?
Honestly, just show up if you want. It's show up on the day, bring a team with you, or just go on your own. It's really easy to find a spot to sit at one of the tables while you're eating dinner at a table. That's your team. You say you can bring one ahead of time, or the groups can just coalesce on their own in the moment. We always have extra tickets at the door. I don't think we've ever sold out. And you can also look on our website to learn more about the event and buy a ticket in advance if you want.
Yes, and this is at Centennial Hall, so it's nice and large, so lots of room for everybody. So that's kind of cool that you don't have to necessarily have a team. Like maybe it's you and a partner, or maybe it's just you, and you want to show up because you're good at Trivial Pursuit or whatever.
Yeah.
Now, how do you break down the categories? Are there categories?
Kind of. Per tradition, there's always a last year in review section, and then there's always a section about Alaska itself. But then beyond that, no, we specifically avoid categories because if you show up and there's an entire category that is only about football or only about Taylor Swift, some people are going to be thrilled with that, and other people are going to have to sit out the next 20 minutes.
I love that because you explained that in your notes to me before the interview about that. And so that you're not out of luck for 10 questions if you don't know who Taylor Swift is. I want to know who that person is who doesn't know who Taylor Swift is. Even if you don't know her music, you probably know the name.
The music.
Or who played on the 1956 New York Yankees. Those ones always, I'm not good at that. I'm like, who stole second base 42 times in 1924? And somebody will know that.
Absolutely.
But not most people.
Yeah.
So the questions are they geared for sort of the average person then to like unearth their trivial knowledge?
I think so, yeah. I mean, they really are random and all over the place. And it also helps to have a wide spectrum of ages on the team that you end up with. There are some questions that, you know, a person over 30 couldn't reasonably hope to to know the answer to. And other questions were, if you haven't lived in Alaska for at least 25 years, you'd be lucky to know the answer.
Oh, I see.
So I try to make everybody feel special at least once during the process for knowing that one little bit of information.
I see. Okay, that's kind of cool. I really like that. And also, we want to talk a little bit about dress. What is the opportunity for dress this year?
There are far too few opportunities to dress to the nines in this town. So if you want to, this is one where you can put on a ball gown or sequins or top hat and tails, and you won't feel completely out of place. So highly recommend it. Or put on international clothing. That is the theme. Or if that's an impediment to you showing up at all, just come dressed however you want to and enjoy.
Yeah, I think that's always a nice thing not to have to be forced into dressing. But if you want to, that's kind of the fun of it.
I wore a kilt one year.
Oh, nice. That's good. And also, you have a note here. If you're under 21, make sure you bring a parent or a guardian. If you want to be on the team, drag your dad or your mom along, or your, you know, friend who's over 21.
Yes, there is the standard no host bar, which means that we have to have parents and guardians for the kids. But if you are a kid, you get a student rate ticket for only $40.
I see. Oh, that's kind of nice. Yeah. And it all starts on, doors open at 6 o'clock. There's a buffet dinner. There's a silent auction, as Carl said. There's all kinds of things that go on. And this is also a national event?
It is technically. That one is more designed for students. It's kind of like a poetry out loud for trivia in a way.
I see.
Whereas our version is specifically a fundraiser for the program.
I see. Okay.
And we don't use the national question bank. There is one, but those questions are really obscure and not the most entertaining in the world.
No, they all come from Carl's mind, which is a little scary.
Oh, you're too kind.
So I ask you this every year, and I'm going to ask again, but can you give us an example of a question? I know you can't give us any from this year because that would be cheating. But is there some like-minded questions from previous years you might be able to share with us?
Usually they're kind of long, maybe an entire paragraph, almost like a word problem you would have encountered in high school.
Mm.
But one of my favorites was very simple. It just showed a map of Alaska and said, where is Anwar? And had A, B, C, and D on the map. And you had to pick. Because we hear about this place all the time, but you don't necessarily actually know precisely where it is.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
So that was one of my favorite questions from the Alaska section last year.
And do you keep track of percentages of who got what right and who got what wrong?
Every year, I think I'm going to do that and figure out what was the hardest question every year and what was the easiest. And every year, I am so fried by the end of this week, staying up till 2 a.m. to get this thing ready to go that I never do.
I love it. It's so fun. It's WorldQuest 2025. It's the biggest and most beloved trivia event in Juneau, according to Carl Broderson. And it's a fundraiser, more importantly, for the Juneau World Affairs Council, that organization that brings wonderful people to town to explain the world to us, which is kind of cool. And for more information and to get tickets for this event, they range in price from $40 to $75. $40 is for students. Mm-hmm. And they're all available on the JWAC website at jwac.org. It's this Saturday night, February 2nd at Centennial Hall. Carl, thanks so much. Gwyneth Cheese for being here. Did we miss anything?
No. See you Saturday. Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it. Okay, up next, lighthouses and more will be discussed in this Friday's Fireside Chat out at Mendenhall Glacier. We'll find out more with Gary Gillette and Renee Hughes next here on Juneau Afternoon from KTOO.
You're listening to KTOO's Tlingit Word of the Week. This week's word comes from Kahuan Ish George Davis. The word this week is gooch.
Gooch.
That means wolf. And here's a sentence.
Gooch. Ke-ka-wa-kach.
The wolf howled. Let's hear it again.
Gooch.
Wolf. Gunas Chish to Hune Lance Twitchell, Gold Belt Heritage Foundation, and the University of Alaska Southeast for this audio.
Kahuan Ish, George Davis was Akhtane Tan and the child of a Tsagwedi man. He grew up in Kheer, Cake, Alaska, and learned to speak well because he would always bring traditional foods to the elders there. As someone who fished a lot and spent time on the land, he knew Tlingit place names all over the area, and he learned many stories and advanced ways of speaking.
And tune in next week for another Tlingit Word of the Week from KTIO.
K KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Clenni Dee have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I am your host, Boston Christopher. This Friday, the Fireside Chat series continues with Lights of Inside Passage and Beyond. It will take place 7 p.m. at Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. The presentation this week will be a brief history of lighthouses in Alaska and focus on Sentinel. That's what I was having trouble with that one. Sentinel Island Lighthouse, including recent historic preservation activities. I am joined now by Gary Gillette and Renee Hughes from the Gastineau Channel Historical Society. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you in the studio today to talk lighthouses. How's it going?
Thank you.
Good.
Yeah, it's going good. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about this Friday's chat. You're going to be talking, your title is Lights of Inside Passage and Beyond. Tell us a little bit about what that means.
Okay, well, during the gold rush in the late 1880s, there was so much maritime traffic up the Inside Passage heading to the gold fields and beyond. And there were a lot of shipwrecks. So Alaska Territory at the time asked Congress to install some lighthouses. It took nearly 20 years before they finally passed funding and started building the first lighthouses. So I'm going to kind of go through a brief history of Alaska lighthouses and give little facts about those. Then I'm going to talk about the lens and the light itself. That's quite a feat of engineering. And focus on the history of Sentinel Island, which our society now owns and operates, and then show what we've been doing for the last 25 years that we've been involved in preservation and some of the projects we've got going on. And our latest enterprise is joining up with a local tour company, so we now do daily tours out there.
Oh, wow.
The summer.
Oh, that's
so
kind of cool.
We've opened it up to the public so that people can come out and visit.
And you said in the intro, I was mentioning something about recent historic preservation activities. For Sentinel Lighthouse, is that what's some of the stuff that's been worked on?
Yes.
Okay.
So
several others are working on.
Yeah, just to, briefly, there's, I think, five lighthouses that are being cared for by nonprofit organizations. So we're all doing preservation-type projects. We had a situation where the Coast Guard years ago took out all the windows in the lighthouse, 13 of them.
Oh, wow.
Filled them in with concrete.
Why?
Because they didn't need to be out there anymore, so that everything was automated and they were afraid people would break in, and they had generators and stuff in that building. And then in the 80s, they solarized everything, so all they needed was some batteries and a few solar panels. They got rid of all the mechanical stuff, and then they filled in all the windows. And so one of our first chores was to go out and bust out 10-inch thick 60-year-old concrete so we could bring back the windows so that it looked like it did when it historically.
Wow. Do you know how many lighthouses there are in Southeast?
There were 16.
Okay.
Now, some of them have been downgraded and the lighthouse is no longer there. Some of them don't even have a light. A lighted aid to navigation, but a day board or something. But I'll kind of point those out as we go through.
Yeah, it's really interesting too, because like you said, you're going to talk a little bit about the actual light of the lighthouse. Right. I've seen a couple of those up close. I love lighthouses. I love going to them and traveling them. I used to take my daughter to them when I was a kid, anywhere we could get off the beaten path. And even if you have to drive, you know, 2 miles to the coast, right? It was okay, we're going to go see this lighthouse. And yeah, when you see them up close, they're fascinating in terms of how they work.
Yeah, we have one in Juneau that's at the State Museum, which was from Cape Spencer.
Okay.
The lens, the original lens from Sentinel Island is down at
Alki Point.
Alki Point in West Seattle.
I see.
We'd like to get it back to Juneau, but it's the home of the 17th District Commandant. I'm not sure we'll be able to talk
into it.
But the title is Lighthouses of the Inside Passage and Beyond. So they go all the way up to Cordova area, and then they also go out on the chain. There's a couple of them way out on the chain.
Yeah.
And, of course, Cordova is kind of in between southeast and southwest. But, so there's about 16 of them, and I'll talk about those.
And I want to pick up on something you said when you said that the Coast Guard boarded, they put the concrete in there because it wasn't needed anymore because of digital. Are they still useful lighthouses, or people using like all these electronic devices on the ships now? They don't need the lighthouses anymore.
No, their lighthouses are still in operation. Ours is still in operation. The Coast Guard maintains the light itself. We take care of the building and the grounds. The Coast Guard still takes care of the light.
Okay.
And it's the same in the other ones where there's nonprofits. Point Retreat, Five Finger, Cape Decision, Sentinel, and now Eldred Rock. I don't think I missed one, but Eldred Rock is recently there's been a group working on that one. So between all of the five nonprofits, all the lights still operate and are maintained by the Coast Guard.
I guess what it is then is you're saying that because some of it's digitized in the lighthouse, they don't need a lighthouse keeper. They don't need somebody to live there to take care of the facility. Is that why they had boarded it up?
It's still a marker as an aid to navigation.
Right. But it's because it used to be, you'd see a little house next to it and there'd be some, like we just played that funny song, I Want to Marry a Lighthouse Keeper, which is from the soundtrack to Clockwork Orange from, the 70s. But yeah, it's kind of funny because, you would see when you see these places that are sort of renovated or they're upkept by organizations like yourselves, you're seeing the little house, you're seeing the lighthouse itself. And then when you can imagine, there's something nostalgic about thinking about living that lifestyle, right? Of like being the lighthouse keeper and being
able
to have
a lot of romanticism falling around them.
There's something about it that is, you wouldn't probably want to do the job, but we can sort of have the nostalgic feel of it.
Well, it's easy for a week versus a year.
Right.
Yeah, and before, the Coast Guard took them over in 1939. Originally, it was the U.S. Lighthouse Establishment under the Department of Revenue.
Mm.
Then later it went to the U.S. Lighthouse Service under the Department of Commerce. And in 1939, they placed it in the Coast Guard. And we actually had a guy out there on one of our tours years ago, Chuck Johnstone, who's no longer with us, but he lived out there when he was 12 years old. His father was a keeper.
Wow.
And so he told us some interesting stories. One of the interesting things is at that time in Alaska, if you had five or more kids in one location, you were authorized a teacher.
Oh.
And so the lighthouse between the keeper and the assistant keeper, they had five kids. So there was a teacher that was signed to Sentinel Island and went out and lived with the assistant keeper, just lived with the family and taught the kids.
That's amazing. Renee, you gave me an idea as a fundraiser, which is if you have one of these lighthouses and there is a place to stay out there, you do like a timeshare and you charge people like an Airbnb to go have the experience for a week of being a lighthouse person.
We do allow people to go over and experience an overnight out there.
Oh, well, there you go. That's awesome then. And that's all part. I know you are both part of the Gastineau Channel Historical Society, which is the keepers of the Sentinel Lighthouse, and then other things that you do. Renee, do you want to just mention a couple of those other things?
We do the Mining Museum and the Lighthouse. Plus, we have a variety of publications And there's a timeline on the website, junohistory.org, that has been very much detailed, put together about our community. And on February 1st, we're going to have a little get-together at the library looking for volunteers up at the Mining Museum.
Oh, for Last Chance Mining Museum, which is a nonprofit museum that you run, and it's a wonderful place. So that's this Saturday. Okay, yes. So that's good to know. In addition to the talk on Friday night. And where is the event on Saturday?
It's going to be at the library at 1 o'clock.
Downtown library.
Downtown library at 1 o'clock.
Yes.
And you're looking for volunteers for this summer.
Yes, mainly the Mining Museum, but we're so busy doing so many other things. We're always looking for people that are interested in history that want to just be part of our organization.
Awesome. I love that.
And we do have some projects that are ongoing out at the Lighthouse. We got a couple of grants last year to there's a couple of outbuildings that we use for, you know, like a little cabin. We need to re-roof them and do some siding repair and stuff. And then we also got a grant to repair and repaint the lighthouse building itself.
Oh, nice.
So you'll give more details on Friday.
We'll talk more about that on Friday. But there again, it's another opportunity for people to come out and volunteer. Everything from weed eating to carpentry skills.
You need it all. I like Renee's marketing mind. She's like, don't give it all away. You got to come Friday to the talk and get pitched on some of these other things. But it's going to be so cool. It's this Friday night at 7 p.m. at Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. Now, they have it listed as Lights of the Inside. You say, is it Lighthouses of the Inside Passage?
No, Lights.
Lights, because there's different. There's more than just lighthouses, right?
Well, they wanted to make
it more,
a little flashy.
I gotcha. So it's Lights of Inside Passage and Beyond. It's this Friday at 7 p.m. with Gary talking out at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. It's all part of the Fireside Chats. And for more information on those, you can search the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center and find out the upcoming schedule. They're every Friday for the next couple weeks, at least through March or something like that. And we'll have some more people on to talk about those as well in the coming weeks. Gary and Renee, thank you so much. And then just a final plug for Saturday's event, 1 o'clock, the Downtown Library. Learn how you can be a volunteer this summer at the Last Chance Mining Museum or help Gary and Renee with some projects at the Lighthouse, the Sentinel Lighthouse. So thank you so much for being here today. It was really a pleasure to talk to you about this and break a leg on your talk on Friday.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Okay. That will do it for today's Juno Afternoon. On tomorrow's show, we'll talk with a few of the playwrights from this coming weekend's Radio Play Festival happening between Theater Alaska and Juno Ghostlight Theater. And we chat with Christine Carpenter, who is the next artist on tap at Alaska Brewing Company. Juno Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Auk Bay 91.7. Hello, out the road. Find the show online at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, subscribe to the podcast, offer feedback or suggestions, or find out how to be a guest on the show. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Juno Afternoon is a project of the KTOO Arts and Culture team. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Trepp. Gunath Cheesh, and have a joyous Juno evening.